The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
We're just over 2 weeks away from polling day when we will each have a chance to cast our vote. But how does our voting system work and how can you make the best use of your vote? Gavin Riley, political correspondent for Virgin Media News, is with me now to explain the ins and outs of proportional representation for new voters and also for older voters who haven't got a clue either. So, Gavin, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. And there are quite a few new voters as well. I saw yesterday that there's 115,000 applicants to become first-time voters now. So even though we used the same system for the locals and Europeans 5.5 months ago, there will be a lot of people doing this for the first time.
For the very first time. Now, how did we end up with this system? Because it's only ourselves and Malta who use it.
And there's one common thread in the history of those two countries, which is the Brits.
Yeah.
When we had the breakaway formation of the Irish Republic and the first Dáil meeting in 1919, the TDs that met then in the Mansion House were elected through the system that is still used in the UK, the first-past-the-post system. But what you realise there is that the country was still relatively finely divided as regards those who wanted rebellion and breakaway and independence versus those who still wanted a role. And yet there was an overwhelming number of Republican MPs that were elected in 1918 and met in the Mansion House and said, we want nothing to do with you anymore.
So it wasn't representative of public mood?
Not as finely split down as the public mood was. So when partition came in and when the treaty was adopted, what Britain bequeathed to us was the idea of multi-seat constituencies. So instead of what you have in Westminster, where there's only one TD for Holborn, and that's Keir Starmer, and there's only one MP for everywhere else, what they decided was we would have multi-seat constituencies because it was the best way of making sure that the diversity of opinion as regards hard or soft nationalism, or even making sure that unionists themselves still had a seat. Because in 1918, only a handful of unionists got elected in the 26 counties. They basically represented Trinity College. But if you had multi-seat constituencies in this new free state, the 26 counties, there was a reasonable chance that the odd unionist or the odd person with sympathies to the British system might still get in as the last candidate of the five. So the idea was to try and be broadly more representative.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at Britain and you've got maybe a 45-55 split between Labour and the Conservatives, or whichever two parties might be vying. I mean, the 45 might never get a look in ever. They might never be represented in Parliament.
Because if it was uniformly split across the entire country, where Labour, for example, had 55% support in every constituency and the Conservatives had 45, in every single constituency, Labour would win. And you would have a House of Commons that was packed full of Labour MPs and no representative for the 45% of the people who supported the minority. At least in the Irish system, with multiple TDs per constituency, there's a good chance that the slate of TDs you have as a whole is broadly representative of how the public views.
Now, we're big into recycling on this programme, and this is the ultimate in recycling, your vote.
Yeah, effectively, the plain principle of the Irish electoral system is that your vote can be recycled as many times as needed, so it has the highest possible opportunity of electing someone to Dáil Éireann. So if you vote for a candidate and that candidate gets eliminated fairly early on, your vote is not wasted. If you've given your second preference to somebody else, that person can get your vote and it can be passed onwards. So your vote under this system is designed to do as much work as it possibly can to make sure that eventually somebody is dragged over the line.
Now, if your vote, the next preference on your vote, because you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 down to the end of the voting paper.
Or just one, if you want to.
If you want to, you can plump. But if your next preference is someone who's already eliminated, does your vote die at that point, or does it skip the elimination and go on?
No, it's skipped over. And this is why when you're listening to the discussions from returning officers and people sitting in this studio and others in 2 or 3 weeks' time talking about the dynamics of the count, they'll talk about your next available preference. So if, for example, your number one candidate has gotten a stonking majority and your vote is one of their surplus and your number two is already gone, they'll go down to your number three. And if your number three was already gone, they'll go to your four. No. They will go to the next highest preference, the candidate that is still alive in the race, and give the vote to them to try and keep it working.
Now, one of the things about the benighted voting machines that we had for a brief period was the fact that you could do things mathematically. You could look at all the second preferences of the whole count and then you'd spread them proportionately onwards.
Yes.
This way, when you've got a surplus,
yeah,
it's a fairly random thing. You get bundles and bundles and bundles of the surplus. Mm. But if you recount, if you put them all back in the box and shuffle them up, you'd get a different set of surplus votes.
Only a marginal set. There is a certain element of randomness to it. One of the things that is often forgotten when we're doing election coverage and you see somebody that gets elected on the first count and they've got more votes than they need and you're trying to figure out which votes they then pass onwards.
Yeah.
let's say the target that you need to get elected is 10,000 votes and you get 16,000. They don't just pick up any random 6,000 and decide to pass them on. They will go through all 16,000, look at the next available preference on each of them and pass them on pro rata. So you'll pass on 6,000 ballots that look like the 16 as a whole. But you can only, the humans have a limit.
Yeah.
You can only go one far.
But the computer could do this, absolutely.
And we actually changed the electoral system for the three constituencies, the two in Dublin and one in Meath, that used the e-voting machines in 2002 so that they were able to do that. So actually, if you look at the formal breakdown in those counts, you'll see that people are credited with receiving fractions of votes, which we don't do otherwise. They do that in Northern Ireland, I believe, that they try to pass on fractions of votes in as much as is possible to try and have it as broadly representative as they can.
Now, people try sometimes to vote strategically, and we know the candidates want them to do that. Oh, your man is safe. Vote for me. Give him your number two if you want.
And there are some candidates that are already saying, for the love of God, don't do that. People listening to the Calling It podcast with Ivan and Sean this year who are saying, no, it's the death knell. If you say that I'm safe, there's 10,000 votes that I could have been getting that I'm not getting because people think that my vote isn't needed.
So really, should you go for the person you love best and forget about strategy?
To a point, the system is designed so that you shouldn't ever have to think so strategically because your vote can be made to work and if your vote is not needed by your preferred candidate, it could be passed onwards. In principle, there is no need for you to do that. So if there is somebody who you think is your best preference but you think they're safe, the system is designed that you shouldn't actually have to do that. I suppose the danger is that if you feel like there is another candidate who you think might be on the danger line and you want to do something for them, there is the argument that you could give them your number one vote and spare your actual first preference. But if everyone did that, then the safe candidate would actually lose because no one would give them their first preference.
But equally, if everyone loves X best, but Y is a close second and Y gets all the number twos, but no number ones,
then they're gone.
Y is gone.
There is a candidate advertising within a stone's throw of this building that is looking for number twos if they're available. And the difficulty with Ireland's electoral system is if you are everybody's second favourite, but you don't get any first preferences at all, you are basically bottom of the leaderboard come the first count, and there's a good chance that you are gone straight away. So you do need to have a certain level of first preferences just to be competitive in the game at all.
Now, we know that the parties themselves sometimes divide the territory, and they say, okay, candidate X, you're getting your number ones there, and that's what we tell our canvassers, and candidate Y, you're going to get the number ones in that part of the constituency. But of course, doesn't always
hold. Because one of the things which is so fascinating for us professional watchers of all of this is that you might know within a constituency that there's probably enough support to elect one TD from party X. But if you have two candidates, it's that old limerick about there once were two cats from Kilkenny and yada, yada, yada. And instead of two cats, there weren't any because the two of them would split the vote so finely. So one will obviously want to be supreme over the other so that when the lower ranking candidate is elected, there's a good chance that you will get good transfers or preferences from them and they'll be the ones that drag you over the line. But the important thing is that you have to outrank them on first preference votes or else it's likely to be you that gets eliminated first.
Now, talk to me about going the whole way down the paper. Is that a good idea?
It depends on whether you are passive about other candidates or not. As we mentioned, it is entirely legitimate if somebody wants to cast number one on their ballot. And
suppose you
leave.
Put X instead of number one and it's the only mark on your paper.
X is permissible. But as long as it's only the, as long as it's the only mark, the general rules are that you're not allowed any handwriting on
a paper.
Okay,
so if you put opposite your plumper, the best of a bad lot,
not allowed, because handwriting will make you identifiable, at least in principle. I mean, it's very difficult for anyone to look at that and go, "That's Pat's handwriting there," or "That's Gavin's handwriting." But at least in principle, you can make yourself identifiable, so you're not allowed to do that. If you mark an X, that is understood to be your one and only preference. But if you're doing numbers, you have to start with a one and then go to somewhere else and write a two and write a three. I have seen, by the way, in the local elections only a few months ago, quite a few people who thought that you could put an X beside any number of candidates because you could vote equally for any number of them. You have to have preferences. So you have to say somebody is my number one, somebody is my number two, somebody is my number three.
How do they calculate the quota?
This is often misunderstood, and actually I think I'm quite arithmetically minded, so maybe it comes more naturally to me, but I think this is relatively easy to understand. If there are, for example, Pat, if there are 100 people casting their votes and you're only electing one person to a job, what is the minimum number that person needs to make sure that they are absolutely elected? If there's only one job to fill, 50 votes might not be enough because somebody else could also get 50 votes. So half the vote isn't enough. What you need is one more than half the vote. So 51 votes would make sure that you're absolutely secure. That's the quota. If you have 100 voters and you're electing two people, 33 votes might not be enough because you could have two other people that also get 33. So then what do you do? But if you get 34, one vote more than a third, then you're safe. So effectively, people sometimes think of it as being some kind of a threshold. Really, it's just a target. It's the number beyond which you are unassailable. So in a four-seat constituency, if you get one more than one-fifth of the vote, it's impossible for four other people to catch you. So that's the quota. So there's a mathematical way of doing it, but basically one more than the number of seats that is available, add one to it, and that is the quota. And when we're doing the counts, any votes that are beyond the quota are considered to be the surplus, and they are the votes that can be passed onwards to somebody
else. And that could be the second count, would be the distribution of a surplus. You eliminate a candidate then when they no longer have any prospect of getting elected. How can they eliminate multiple candidates?
If there are so many candidates down at the bottom that effectively none of them could save any other, then you can eliminate more of them at once. So the rule is that you have to look at the bottom candidate on the leaderboard and hypothetically imagine if every single one of their votes went to the person who is second from bottom on the leaderboard, could that person be saved? And if the answer is no, even if every single ballot couldn't put them any higher up, then you can eliminate multiples at the same time. Sometimes professional election watchers don't like that because it means it's harder to determine who the supporters of candidate X would like as their second preference. But it does make the count speedier that instead of having a count where you already know who's going to be bottom next time, you can just eliminate more of them at the same time.
Now, these are conundrums coming up from our listeners. So if I want to give my first vote to someone who's guaranteed to be eliminated, a no-hoper in other words, and my second vote to someone who's guaranteed to be elected, I'm safe to vote accordingly without my number two being eliminated.
If your first candidate you believe is a no-hoper, you should give them your number one, because if they are genuine
they'll
your first
gone.
Preference, you should do so. If you anticipate that they're gone, then you know that your subsequent preference can be passed onwards. And if that's going to a relatively safe candidate who you think is going to get in quite easily anyway, then you should feel free to do that, because if you have a third preference, there's a good chance that your ballot paper will be passed onwards and that then you might be able to save somebody beyond your second preference. So your vote can work as hard as you like, provided you fill out that many boxes on the form in the first place.
Now, some more questions. I'm not in the country on the 29th. Can I vote somewhere in advance? That's from Stephen and Carlo.
No, you can't. And if you were leaving for work, the window to register for a postal vote has already closed. It was Tuesday of last week. The situation regarding registration for that is obnoxiously slow. You have very little time to be able to register for these things.
And all this talk of early voting in the United States has probably given people ideas.
Yeah, well, and probably rightly so, because they see it as being rather convenient, and that if you just have other plans that aren't related to work, or that if you just had a holiday booked but you'd like to be able to cast your vote, in principle, I think a lot of people would say you shouldn't be debarred from doing so, but Irish law doesn't allow for that, unfortunately.
A suggestion that we should teach what you've just been teaching us in secondary schools.
I don't mean to. It's part of the CSPE curriculum, but sometimes people don't often kind of grasp the numeracy of it. Not to give myself an entirely shameless plug, but if one were to go to my social media profiles, just search Gav Riley anywhere, there's a pinned video in which I explain the whole thing using Smarties, which I know was quite popular in a lot of primary schools last May.
Now this one, could one really say that our voting system works when two men who were barely elected in their own constituencies following six or seven counts can go on to hold the office of Taoiseach between them for several years?
You do hear this sometimes, that people think that a TD is somehow less legitimate because they didn't get elected until the 15th count, as was the case for Simon Harris in Wicklow last time around. He only got in on the 15th count, and I believe actually he got in without actually reaching the quota himself. That is blind to a few things. Firstly, that if you are a candidate from a party with multiple candidates, let's say in Fine Gael's case in Wicklow in 2020, there were multiple Fine Gael candidates, so the Fine Gael vote was split between amongst those candidates versus Sinn Féin, which was often running candidates alone. So if you're a Sinn Féin supporter, you only had one horse to back versus two or three for the larger parties. So it does split that way. But ultimately, the system doesn't determine that anyone is more or less legitimate because of which candidate
they got in. And then there's voter manipulation. I mean, Fine Gael under Gareth Fitzgerald, and he was the statistician par excellence. He got three people elected in what is now Dublin Bay South, three Fine Gaelers. And, you know, he was on the cusp maybe of not even getting elected himself on one occasion.
And this
situation, because he was splitting the vote mathematically.
And it's often the case that, you know, we often talk on election day about if you have any aspirations of joining into cabinet, cabinet, you sort of need to be seen to be doing your bit for the party by bringing home a running mate. Often that will mean having to sacrifice some of your own vote to bring somebody else over the line by making sure that your first preference voters actually go for your running mate from time to time. And that's going to artificially deflate your standing. So you don't necessarily end up topping the poll or necessarily getting in the first count. But the system doesn't decree between how legitimate or illegitimate
once you're
are.
In, you're in.
Once you're in, you're in. And ultimately, and this is often overlooked too, the Taoiseach is elected by the Dáil, not by the people. So the Dáil looks at, around the room and says, there's 160 of us here, who should be Taoiseach? And if that's Simon Harris or if it's Micheál Martin, then so be it. It's not
or Pillow
by
Mike.
People. Or Pillow Mike.
I have 9 candidates in my constituency. Is it okay to vote 1, 2, 3, 4 and then the last 5 I don't want to vote for?
If you are genuinely passive about that other 5, it is absolutely fair for you to
you
say,
go as far as you like
I have an order of preference for these 4. The general principle is that you can't help any candidate that you don't cast a vote for or a preference for. So if you are looking at those 9 candidates and the top 4 of them, you genuinely, I'd like that person, and if not them, then I'd like this other person. And if you get past those 4 and you look at the other 5 and say, meh, don't care, I'm passive, then it's fine. But if you look at the other 5 and there is still somebody that you would still rather give favour to than the others, you should give them your number 5. Or if there is one of those 5 that you think is an absolute cretin and shouldn't be left anywhere near the place, you should vote for everyone else to keep them out.
Because can give them the last vote, it doesn't matter.
Because if you are a count staff and you're in the RDS or somebody else on count day and you're looking at that ballot and you say, right, this person has already cast their 4 preferences and those 4 are either elected or eliminated, I can do nothing more with this ballot paper. But if you don't want that, if you do want somebody to get in ahead of the others, you should keep voting down the line.
Final question. Why don't we have a box where you can tick none of the above?
Because I suspect it would probably lead to all sorts of enormous political vacuums where none of the above would win. I got my grounding in student politics where they do have a none of the above. There's a reopen nominations option on every students' union election and they'd get elected more often than you'd think. I suppose it's one of those things where actually in multi-seat constituencies, you need to fill all of them. If you had situations like in Westminster where you're only picking one, and if you just say, no, I don't like any of these, it could work.
It could be a good political message.
But if you're trying to pick 5 people from your constituency to sit for you in Dáil Éireann, how would you pick 4 of them and then say, actually, no, we don't want any of the rest? And ultimately, you have to fill the Dáil to elect a Taoiseach. You have to have a Taoiseach to elect a government. You have to have a government to run the country. So that's the way it works.
Very good. Gavin Riley, political correspondent with Virgin Media News. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.